Hello and welcome back to Hot Factor 91.3 Nigeria. In phone here in Port Harcourt, I'm Dio. Happy New Year to you once again. It's 9 minutes gone past 4 p.m. Discussions continue. Appreciate you staying tuned. If you joined the conversation at the start today, or maybe you were a part of it yesterday, you might remember that we kickstarted an analysis of the River State Governor Yetsun Wike's New Year address to Rivers residents. Cost of the length of it and the detail with which we would we intend, and I do hope that we're able to achieve that. Due to that analysis, we weren't able to wrap it up yesterday and figured it might be a good idea to continue with that analysis today. And myself and my guests did agree it was the proper thing to do, and thankfully they are available. So I will get to them shortly, but once again, if you're just joining us, we're continuing with the analysis of the River State Governor's the address to Rivers residents. My guests too were in the studio yesterday, have once again joined me today. I've got with me in the studio, Olan Lekan Ige, his editor with the Independent Monitor. Lekan, great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Diane. It's good to be here once again.
Henry Kine is here as well. He's a legal advisor with the Committee for the Defense of Human Rights. Henry, thank you for your time once again.
Thank you, Diane, for having me again here.
All right, gentlemen, yesterday we wrapped up at point number 30, or paragraph 30, if you will, which had to do with revoking, we will not, quoting now, we will not hesitate to revoke the certificate of occupancy of any house in these areas without a refuse disposal being, or whose occupants are caught disposing refuse on the streets or open spaces. We talked about, I think even before this paragraph, the issues of refuse waste management in Rivers was covered, issues of cat pushers, manhole stealers, and the rest of it were addressed as well. So I think, moving on to paragraph 31 now, and I quote, "We have also banned the posting of advert materials of any kind, including posters, flyers, pictures, artworks, placards, or inscriptions on or under our flyers, bridges, concrete walls, and the safety barricades along the walls." Now, gentlemen, this is a serious problem, not just in River State, but in Nigeria. From the time that I first gained consciousness, I think I remember that it has been a problem we've had to deal with. Indiscriminate posting of posters, and either, especially during, you know, elections seasons, political parties are very guilty of this. At other times, religious institutions, especially those of the Christian faith, even businesses as well. A new barbershop opens somewhere, they want to distribute flyers. A new photocopying center opens up somewhere, they want to post banners or posters everywhere, so you know you can make a photocopy there for 5 naira a copy, and color is probably 12 naira or something like that. I don't know how much it is at these days. And governments across the country, in Lagos where I grew up mostly, have tried to curb this, to put an end to it. I'm not sure if even Lagos has completely succeeded in doing that. In the past years as well, especially recent years, the River State Government also has talked about this incessantly. I know that even the leadership of the River State Signage and Advertisement Agency, led by Honorable Ikea, is very much concerned about this particularly and has taken some steps as well to address this. But it seems nothing works. What's the problem here, gentlemen?
Well, Dio, I was trying to make an argument yesterday and say, look, one of the things that encourages impunity in Nigeria is because people don't get punished for violating rules or guidelines or laws and something. Look, Dio, there is no way we can stop posting of all sorts of things if we don't get people punished for it. You just mentioned names of institutions, you know, that are mostly guilty of putting posters and flyers and all of that, defacing the city of Port Harcourt. If, for example, Church ABD does that, and you punish the church, itself. Company XYZ does that, the company gets punished. Business center QBD does that, and there's a severe punishment for it. Another person does it, and there's a severe punishment. I'm sure others will learn lessons. But if there's no punishment for it, how do you stop it? I've seen some, even as this afternoon, of a presidential aspirant somewhere around Aba Road, on the median. They've already posted some on the median on Abarod. The presidential aspirant, whoever that did that, should be punished. Interestingly, whoever that was sponsoring the posting of those posters has his name on the on it. Mm. Is to get the person arrested or get the person punished.
What if the defense says, "Oh, I didn't ask them to do that," or the aspirant says, "I don't know anything," as they always say anyway, "I don't know anything about this. I'm not even aspiring for the position in the first place. So why would I have printed posters?"
Good. That is now left for the signage and advertising agency and River State Waste Management Agency to also have their men on ground to patrol all these areas. It's difficult to predict crime. It's difficult to determine whether somebody has crime in his mind or not. But if we're able to do this, I'm sure 75% of the time we know those who are directly responsible for this. And when we have stringent monitoring for all of this, you know, when we talk about much decent societies, sometimes everything is not about going to prison. Sometimes everything is not about punishing people. Sometimes the punishment can even be community service. Community service can mean helping to sweep the stretch of Abarod. Community service can be helping to evacuate the drains that are blocked. Community service could mean helping to control traffic. There are various kinds of punishments that, you know, people can serve. It's good that the governor has mentioned it. Truly, I agree with the governor that, look, these things deface the city of Port Harcourt. You know, especially when you go to some of the flyovers that have been beautifully painted, there's absolutely no reason why any sane person should put posters on those things.
And I guess sometimes it may not be about apprehending everyone, but simply making examples of a few persons. Henry, your thoughts on this?
Yes, I recall that we used to have a River State Beautification Committee or something, and then earlier in this town, you would see those members of that committee or that agency of government even keeping the gardens, Agzibor Park, and other areas. And then part of what they were doing then also was to ensure that these defacing activities of some deviant citizens are actually also taken off. But I agree with Ige that it does appear that when you keep talking and making policies, but you don't have some form of punishment in such a way that we will deter people, you continue to have some of these things repeating. Humans are always seeking to probably take advantage or opportunity of anything that there is an opening. Even in tax, you hear tax evasion or avoidance. It's probably taking opportunity of the openings in the tax system or tax laws to doing that. So the same way, if the situation is open for those who are not decent in their hearts and in their minds, they will continue to deface society. So I agree that I think what should happen here, vicarious liability. Get the individual involved first. Let him be the one to show that he wasn't aware, or that, not just to say I didn't. How did your face get on this poster to the extent that is this massively put around the town and probably even seen elsewhere in other states, and then you say you're not aware? First, vicarious liability should hold you. You should come to answer so that even if you're not going to be punished, those characters would not want to be invited even any other time again, or would not want to even probably have to be asked questions or to be put on the media that in fact this person has been called to be to question for this act. Some of them actually are truly aware of their agents who are doing these things, but because they know that they probably are not caught right in the scene, in the act, and then they usually, because also in the past people have always been defensive, so denying simply, "I didn't know." And again, the agencies have a responsibility to thoroughly investigate all of this too. I believe that sometimes, especially those in the political circle, the political posters and all that, they really do not investigate. And probably because they're also culpable in it. Mm. You also see their faces as well. And that's why, especially when you have government officials also having their faces put up somewhere, and then you want to punish another person, when probably your face has been somewhere and nobody punished you. So they should check themselves. Because most of these paper, posters and flyers, and it's not about me. It's not about the farmer in the village. It's not about the taxi driver or the bus driver. It's most times about them. So I think they should really be very committed and determined in this kind of... But otherwise, I agree that it's really defacing the city. It's making a mess of... the government is struggling to probably give a facelift to society and to the city.
Well, this is definitely one of those instances in the governor's address where he also expresses what's going to be done about the situation, because paragraph 32, he goes, we will establish environmental marshals to enforce compliance with our sanitation laws, including this ban, by arresting and prosecuting both the person who places the advert and the person and institution on whose behalf it is placed, like both of you gentlemen have already proposed. To point 33 now, fellow citizens, this is a very interesting one, especially for those who like to, as we say these days, ball out.
Lijo is right.
In River State and beyond. Fellow citizens, we also have reason to be concerned about the operations and socially harmful activities of nightclubs within residential areas of our state. 34. Apart from the noise and traffic nuisance suffered by innocent residents, no responsible government should continue to tolerate the open display and solicitation of sexual services, drug abuse, and public intoxication that takes place along the streets and public areas abutting some of these nightclubs, lounges, and bars by the youth, some as young as under 14 years. Now, gentlemen, we will discuss this situation, but I also find something interesting here. First, we identify a problem, which is not peculiar to a particular location, but somehow the governor and his team were able to make it about one particular location, to point 35. Consequently, the state government has placed an immediate ban on all nightclub activities, including nighttime trading and street prostitution along Abacha Road and surrounding streets, to stop the harmful effect of these depraved activities on the moral development of our children and society at large. Of course, Abacha Road is in GRA. So, once again, giving the impression that we are just concerned primarily, not entirely, but primarily with what goes on in GRA, new and old GRA, and the rest of you, God will help you. So, your thoughts on that perception, because I think I mentioned that with a few other instances yesterday as well, and also this issue of public display, nightclubs, and all of that. Your take, Henry, start with this.
Yeah, yes. Apparently, I recall that when you're being granted a statutory right of occupancy, and then issued with a certificate of occupancy, you usually will indicate the purpose or the use of that premise or that property allocated or granted to you. And ideally, too, you would have had a situation where if the city is properly planned, where you have town planning, there would have been areas for residents and areas for business. But I think that's been abused. Even the FCT, where we would just hear some places as central business districts, I wonder whether it's still entirely just business. So to that extent, I would agree that government can actually check the kind of activities that go on in certain areas. If an area is actually entirely a residential area and any particular property at the time the statutory right of occupancy was granted and then the certificate of occupancy issued to you is designated to be a residential apartment or residential area, I would wonder if you convert that to some other purpose, whether it will have a question against you. I think yes, legally. Now, that could be one of the reasons the government could look at. Is the government reservation area entirely for residential purposes or also a mix of commercial and residential? Now, if it is commercial and residential, then are there also restrictions of certain kind of businesses? To the best of my knowledge, I do not think so. Because if there is one, then the regulatory agencies then should be held accountable. At what point did we begin to depart from the primary use of residence to commercial use in those areas? You go to industrial area, Transamari, for instance, that is actually supposed to be for commercial and business industrial area. You see residences now. Now, in this kind of misuse of premises, it's also a way that can justify this kind of regulation. But worse, one would even then get concerned. What about legitimate businesses then now? A mix of legitimate and illegitimate business in this particular clause we've read, and then the ban declaration. You have the legitimate business of a person who is, I'm not sure that we have any law that is proscribing nightclubbing or any place of leisure or any place of relaxation. As a matter of fact, it's even a right I mentioned here when we were reading it out, that leisure is a right. After working the whole day from morning to evening, and that's why our life expectancy in Africa is, or basically in Nigeria, is less than 54. So do we rest enough? And there are some persons that probably after work is to go the bowling, to go hang out, and then It's no crime if you go there and take a bottle of beer, or even do a cigarette for those who elect to do so. They have the right to do so with all the caveats. Now, but there's the other aspect in the mix of illegitimate business.
I should mention, by the way, smokers are liable to die young.
So there are the caveats, like I said. Now, so there's that other mix of illegitimate business. Like we would always say, where your right really ends, where the rights of the other person begins. So you would not, because you're doing, you want to exercise your right of how you probably use yourself. But again, there is regulation in society for moral and immoral behavior, depraved behaviors, really. And then we have it where we are culturally based, as a matter of fact. There are certain kind of behaviors that are proscribed and probably regulated, if not proscribed, regulated. So regulated will mean to the extent that you may not have to do it publicly in that regard. So if that's the reason, then of course that could also be justified. But you raised one very sensitive question.
Yeah.
Why not then say that prostitution all over the state? So is it therefore that prostitution on Azikiwe Road is permitted as stands, or display or solicitation of sexual contracts or transactions may be permitted for now? Probably along Peter Audley Road, and the clubs and nightclubs along Peter Audley Road, Azikiwe Road, and probably in the Port Harcourt Township area for now are not affected. How can government do such kind of policies that's lopsided?
Well, I think you should, we must also understand some of the concerns of the governor. I've been around Abacha Road, and you see...
I mean, it's a particular place.
Yes, we've been around... Yes. You know, I've been around Abacha Road, and I've seen quite young girls, probably teenagers, you know. And you wonder why they should be in that kind of place at that kind of hour. But this would be a very tough one to implement. I think for the nightclubs, the governor said the nightclubs shouldn't operate at night, meaning that the clubs will operate in the morning. That's what it means, because it says there'll be no night clubbing and night trading and all of that. So it means they are open from morning till probably night. So it depends on who determines the night. Now, is it 6 p.m.? Is it 7 p.m.? There are a lot of issues around this. I'm sure there'll be maybe better clarifications from the government of the state itself to determine what constitutes night and day. But if you want to look at it, you probably say dawn. Dawn means from 6 p.m. or thereabouts. So if they open from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., what kind of businesses have been conducted? The kind of prostitution we are talking about is not something that is specific to, you know, to certain periods. It takes place every single hour of the day. So how do we get all of this control when you want to situate it with the concerns, you know, of the governor about teenagers going into prostitution and all of that? This one tough area, you know, that may be very difficult to implement in the long run. Because if we say it's the stretch of Abacha Road that this should not take place, it means we'll probably do what we have in agriculture, what we call shifting cultivation. So it means you only shift, you know, away from Abacha Road. Bodji Road is still inside the GRA. Ililiwa Road is inside GRA. Evo Road is inside GRA. There are a whole lot of streets, you know.
King Perikule,
exactly. So it means that you might as well do what they call shifting cultivation. So since business has been banned, you know, along Abacha Road, can't we relocate to other parts of GRA, other parts of River State?
And join your colleagues.
Yes, well, and so to say. So I think the governor may need to take a second look at that and see how this will be achieved in the long run. But it's a little bit difficult, really, for this to be enforced. And in time to enforce, I hope we'll be hearing something else. I hope there won't be cases of, we were arrested and were raped by those who arrested us and all of that. Remember this same thing, you know, happened in Abuja.
Mm-hmm.
Remember this same thing happened in Lagos, mm-hmm. where, you know, people who were offering sex for money were arrested. I'm sure you had a lot of the accusations that trailed the arrest. My money was stolen. My phone was stolen. Oh, no, we were raped by the people who arrested us and all of that. You know, after some time, you find out that it loses steam. The enforcement loses steam. Then with time, they return back to business. That's exactly what's happened in Abuja, especially in areas where they've had to, you know, chase them away. In Lagos, I remember those days, Allen Avenue was very notorious for this kind of things. Allen Avenue, Arumire, some of the adjoining streets of Awolowo and all the rest.
Ayilara,
exactly, in Suruleri. But there were several attempts, you know, to chase these people away. And like a lot of people have said, look, we're on air and we shouldn't be saying this. So it's one of the oldest professions. So some have even said it's a profession, you know, one of the oldest, you know, in human existence. So difficult really, Dayo, to put a lid on this. Difficult.
And I think that a government wants to address this. Once again, I think it also comes down to punishment, once again. The proper kind, not the kind that happened in Abuja or Lagos the other time. The simple case of catching a person red-handed in solicitation. What I know obtains in other crimes, you even have security operatives, police, who go undercover. A policewoman could act as a sex trafficker, and if you approach her and you are, once you begin to negotiate, you're under arrest.
Sure.
And you're tried and regular, you know. So once one or two persons or three persons have such experiences, you find that most guys will not, men or women, whoever engages in this, will not want to fall prey.
But Dai, what of those who patronize the market?
That's what I'm saying.
Because there must be, there's a giver and there's a taker. So it means that if we are going to be arresting those that are into prostitution, we should also be targeting those who patronize them. Because without people patronizing them, I'm sure the market will have shut down.
That's the example I gave.
Yes.
Where a female officer, for example, pretends to be a sex trafficker.
Yes.
And then if a man who patronizes, in this case, approaches her, upon negotiation, he can be arrested and prosecuted.
I'm just knocking my head. Is there really a law that criminalizes prostitution?
To the best of my knowledge,
I just hazard through the criminal code law, reverse it, criminal code act, and then probably even any other. But what seemed to be clear, you could see the trafficking in persons prohibition law clearly talks about trafficking for sex purposes. It is not like we have in this area that has been declared a special area now in Port Harcourt, that's the Abacha Road, and then if an adult, without anybody coercing her, like Ige mentioned yesterday, standing on the road or by the roadside, on this, and then someone is probably driving past, and you probably, the individual flags you down, or your own, you stop, and then you have a conversation, a decent conversation. You are not disrupting any other person. Whatever transaction, whatever discussion you're having, one-on-one, consensually, without any force, and the other person pulls into your vehicle, and you drive off. Of course, you are not going to commit any offense there. So there isn't probably going to be any fiscal open-air whatever activity between the two of them. Whatever agreement they may have had, the place of execution of the agreement may be somewhere else, and then they leave. What offense really would they have committed at that point? Not moral here. There's a distinction between morality and law to a large extent, even if one could influence the other. But there's a great distinction between morality and law. If we do not have an extant provision of the law in our laws, that prostitution or standing, seen standing at any particular time, at any place, they're not wondering that maybe these are similar things that the police, someone may bring in, oh, that we saw you wondering before we open the floodgate for business opportunity for those who will carry it out again. That's another aspect of it. I saw somebody walking around, that's how we allow Gabacha Road. And the arrest now will begin to increase.
Government's direction.
But is there any law against wandering? I'm trekking on the road. I'm trekking from from Ajipa roundabout, and I want to trek to Woji Road, and I trek through Sani Abacha Road. Is there any law that says I cannot? So I'm wondering, there's no, I'm sure lawyers will be able to tell us, is there any law that says that you cannot wander from one end of Port Harcourt to the other? It's your right to choose. You're not committing any crime. You know, that's what the police has always used against young men in those days, that they were found wandering. How do you find somebody wandering? You ask me, you stop me on the road, where am I going to? I'm taking a stroll. Is that one trade? He said, no, you have nowhere to go to. You are thinking of a crime. How do you read somebody's?
We are analyzing the River State Governor's New Year's Day's address. My guest, Olaleko, and again, Henry. Can we go for a quick commercial break? We'll return shortly. We'll continue, and hopefully we can wrap up the analysis today. Do please stay with us.
we take off with the biggest conversations with an exchange of opinions and ideas on the Morning Crossfire. Settle you into your day when we say hello, Port Hackett.
Take you on a ride to the sunny side of life.
Hover a bit while picking at the details on hard facts.
Take a detour through the exciting world of sports.
And get back on track with Let's Talk.
Land you safely as we chit-chat into the morning on Chat Station.
Chat Station.
And then do it all over again on your number one talk, news and sports radio station, 92.3 Nigeria Info.
Welcome back. I still have Factor 91.3 Nigeria Info and Herring for Tango Time Die 24 to go before 5 p.m. Still joined by my guests here in the studio, Andrea Kine and Olanleko. Good gentlemen, you're welcome once again.
Thank you, Dario.
Thank you.
And we are continuing our analysis of the River State Governor's New Year address to Rivers residents and living off the nightclub points in the on Abacha Road. And I do hope, as I believe my guests here have also, sentiments have also echoed, even on and off air, I hope that the police and other security agencies or agents will not see this also as an opportunity to exploit and extort those business centers as well. Not just harass citizens, but also exploit those business centers also. I hope that we'll also look into that and not have a dusk to dawn scenario. If you don't get that, hopefully before the end of the next decade, you will get it. Anyways, moving on to the next paragraph, and that has to do with 36, I believe. Yeah. A very important matter. We're all concerned. We have been concerned with this for years now. Let me also reiterate that we are as overly concerned as the public over the black suit environmental disaster that has continued to envelop Port Harcourt and upsetting residents for quite some time. As a state government, we have drawn the attention of the federal government to this problem and requested for its intervention to stop the activities of illegal bunkering and artisanal crude oil refiners, which have been identified as the main sources of the suit pandemic. 38. Unfortunately, the federal government has remained inexplicably silent of our request, and even complicit to a large extent with security agencies actively aiding, encouraging and protecting the artisanal refiners to continue with their harmful activities unabated. We have equally appealed without success to our people engaging in this illegal business to consider its negative effects on our economy, environment, public safety and public health and disengage from it. We will continue to engage and plead with the federal government to intervene and save our people. However, since the federal security agencies have largely refused to stop the illegal crude oil refining activities in the state, we have no option than to take necessary measures to tackle this particular and direct challenge to our collective health. Consequently, I have directed the chairman of Port Harcourt City Local Government Council to go after all the illegal crude oil refining sites along Creek Road and adjoining areas of the city and shut them down with immediate effect. Furthermore, all local government chairmen are directed to work with community leaders to locate and identify those behind all illegal bunkering and crude oil refining sites in their localities and report to my office for further action. Once again, we express our sympathies to the victims of the recent fire incidences in the state, especially those who lost their loved ones. As a government, we will continue to do our best to strengthen the state fire service to effectively intervene to mitigate the damage during fire incidents. We'll talk about the issue of fire and emergency response in the state in a moment. For me, very critical. But let's talk for a bit about the issue of this illegal bunkering, illegal refining, aka Igbo fire, and the disaster as it has constituted to River State.
Excuse me. Well, I think the governor is right to a large extent, especially when you looked at the issue of oil and gas and whose responsibility it is to administer that sector. Then who controls all the security agencies in Nigeria? Then you could say, look, the federal government has not lived up to its responsibilities, because one of the core responsibilities of the federal government is to protect lives and property, is to protect Nigerians. And when you look at the activities of those who have been into bunkering, how have they been able to access some of the pipelines and all of that, despite the fact that multinational oil companies, NNPC, on behalf of the federal government, have been paying out huge sums of money, you know, as pipeline contracts? Then begin to understand what are the challenges or what are the things that are causing all of this stuff. So to a large extent, you say, yes, the federal government has not lived up to its responsibility in ensuring that we have security agencies arrest these people. On the other hand, too, it's also what has gone wrong with intelligence gathering. We have the DSS, you know, we have the police, we have paramilitary agencies. What have they been doing to ensure that, look, well, we don't have this scenario in River State? And I'm sure if you go along some major roads in Port Harcourt, along some major roads in River State, the East-West Road, especially along Ezekiel Road, you know, especially from town, where you have this stretch of Station Road, Ezekiel Road, just go there and see between Station Roundabout and Spa, that has a roundabout, that's a roundabout in front of Government House. I'm sure you find up to 4 or 5 police checkpoints there. And you see some of these guys who are carrying whatever they've been able to refine, carrying them in their vehicles, and nobody stops them. You know, probably because they pay some gratification to the police people along that area, then you understand why the governor is also saying, look, we have security agencies that are complicit in all of this. But the good thing is that he's taking up the challenge himself by saying, look, we need to now hold our fate in our hands. They will begin to do our own part, which I also think that the state government should have done earlier than now. Take up the parts that you think you can control, then prove to the federal government that, look, we are ready to collaborate with you and ensure we find this thing, you know, to the death. So it's a difficult one, really, but good one. But can local government control whatever that is going on? Because they still have to resort to security agencies to be able to track these people. That remains to be seen.
All right.
Yes, thank you. I would want to quickly distinguish this from the legal thought or consideration of federal government owning oil and gas. That's not where we're going to, really. I simply would give this activity the name that it deserves. It's stealing. It's criminal behavior. And I wonder why no one person, we have not heard the way other criminals, perhaps, or suspected criminals, persons suspected to get involved in some criminal activities, are probably being arrested every day, arraigned, and all of that. How many times have we heard, even the media, carrying the news that some individual or individuals have been arrested for actually either stealing crude oil, refining crude oil illegally without license, without permission, and of course dealing in crude? We have our laws, all the legal frameworks that today have been consolidated into the Petroleum Industry Act prohibits dealing on petroleum products without license. I am not the owner of those products. I won't even get concerned about who steals whose product. We have to place this issue really where it belongs. It is criminal behavior. So if the states, all security agencies, the Honorable Attorney General of River State, who is the chief law officer, and who has the constitutional power to prosecute any individual, to commence, institute any criminal charge against any individual, all of them together have not found anyone to prosecute, well, my concern is about the environmental effect and the health effect of the people. Which, if I go on that, then I place the responsibility squarely on my state government. Because environment, health are issues on the residual list. The River State government has Minister of Environment. The River State government has Minister of Health. The River State government has a responsibility to ensure that the environment within and around River State is clean and healthy, and that every one of us who are here, that we deserve clean and healthy environment, including air. It is not a responsibility that the federal government has to come into. Whether that pollution is caused by probably a decayed fish or some gas emission, or whether it is some person probably illegally or unprofessionally refining a product, it is not the responsibility of the federal government to ensure that we have clean environment here. It is not the responsibility primarily of the federal government to ensure that I have clean air. It is my own state responsibility. And that is how it is. Now, if you look at the products that is being stolen, somebody owns it. Every gas and oil in this country is owned by the federal government, represented by NNPC and the multinational company. It's not my property. It's not the property of the River State government. So if anybody in any way cannot protect his property, it's his business. And again, if for any reason any individual goes to steal their property and they probably leave, who knows whether they have a connivance? Who knows whether the oil companies and NNPC have agreed with these people to take their product? Our primary concern, and the whole, except you want to politicize this, is that the activities of some individuals, not how they got the crude, that's not our problem. Who us the crude. It's not us. But that certain activities of some individuals affecting our life is threats to our lives under Section 33. When you have an environment that is not clean and it's not healthy. And there's a responsibility for that. Is the Rivers State government saying it, they have been overwhelmed? Or that is not just a responsibility to ensure that we have clean environment? The people perpetrating this, are they foreigners? Are they not here in Rivers State? The places that these things are done, is it not here? So is it the federal government that will come to Rivers State or any other state government will come to Rivers State for it? It's not different from every other crime.
Well, the governor did add as well that in his directive to the local government chairman to identify persons or places and report, I'm quoting right now, report to my office for further action. I hope that we will begin to witness what further action means in the coming days, weeks and months as well. And it's not just rhetoric. I very much hope so for the good of every resident of River State, including the governor himself. Now, very important, and very briefly, gentlemen, the issue of response to emergencies. Because he talked about fires. He expressed sympathies to victims of recent fire incidents in River State as the government will continue to do our best to strengthen the state fire service. I think it's almost safe to say that the River State Fire Service is almost non-existent, as far as I'm concerned. We have run several reports in the past stating the condition of the state in which it is. It is not a fire service that's set up to accomplish anything meaningful. And for me, one can put it down to a lot of things, but I wonder as well why the River State government does not have an emergency management response agency like we have at the federal level and has been replicated in some other states as well. As the law even requires that it be done. Because if there is an emergency agency in the state, maybe some of these emergency response units, department agencies, will be better coordinated and better strengthened as well, equipped, very important, to handle some of these issues. You have the same thing when we have floodings, which is perennial, and all the emergencies, basically. You'll take on this very quickly, Henry.
Yes, I had said sometime that the emergency service in River City is completely zero. If it's non-existent, it's not existent. Someone may think there's another fire service elsewhere that is even the headquarters of the River State Fire Service is the one just there at my one flyover. So just imagine the picture of that place, the environment. Well, there is no van there. There is none. They are all dead. There is no facility there. It's embarrassing that that is the headquarters of the University Fire Service. So that tells the full story, that we are not prepared for emergencies. We don't have ambulance service. We don't have any kind of emergency service in this state, not at all. In metropolitan town like Port Harcourt, we don't have ambulances stationed in strategic areas. So today, if there is any accident, even on the streets in Port Harcourt, even on Aba Road, probably other citizens that will first intervene, there is no emergency call, there is no short code, there is no emergency response. So just forget it. There is no emergency service at all. We're only probably, again, one of the things that the governor will say, let's pray to God.
Mm-hmm. Lego, very quickly.
Well, I think it's going forward is to ensure that, look, we equip the fire service, set up the state emergency management agency. I think there are a whole lot of states. I know that of Lagos, acronym for LASEPA. I think we need to have something like that in River State. And that, I think, is one of the things the governor should be looking at. Because if you look at the state of the fire service, we should not even be talking about just the headquarters that is at my one. We should even make attempt to decentralize fire service. Port Harcourt is becoming, you know, bigger and bigger. We have a twin capital, so to say now, Port Harcourt local government and Obiapo. So it means that we should even have fire service stations in Obiapo. We should have more than one in Port Harcourt. We should have in contiguous local government areas to Port Harcourt so that, look, it's easy to mobilize fire service to fight any emergency. But then that's on the part of the government. On the part of the citizens, too, it's also for us to also take responsibility for our safety. For the kind of things we deal in, for the kind of things we keep at home, for the kind of things we do at home. We also owe ourselves, you know, some reasonable level of responsibility to ensure that we are safety conscious most times. But definitely, River State government needs to invest heavily in emergency management agency, and the fire service should not be brought under the state emergency management agency if we do have something like that, so that the state emergency management agency can handle issues like flooding, issues like fire disaster, issues like donating, you know, things to people that are internally displaced, yeah, relief materials and all of that. So River State government surely has to invest more, much more than what we have at the moment, in fire service management.
And whenever we have a disaster, we can't always keep crying that what's the federal
FEMA
have not helped us. They've done nothing for us. The question is, what have we done to help ourselves here as well in the first instance before we start looking to the federal government agency? Then next up, we wish to express our concern about the poor compliance with existing COVID-19 protocols by citizens and the effect of the on the transmission of the disease in the state. Believe it or not, COVID-19 is a reality. It's taken the lives of hundreds of thousands of people and disrupted economic activities across the world. In River State, transmission of the virus continues to surge daily. We appeal to residents to make themselves available for testing and vaccination, whether it is for your first, second, or booster jab, in addition to observing the existing preventive protocols. Let me also remind, okay, let's talk about that for now. So I think that the COVID-19 management in River State is basically a reflection of how we have managed it collectively as a country. Your quick thoughts on that in about a minute, please.
I think what we should be doing at this point now is to encourage as many people as possible to take the vaccine. There is no alternative to taking the vaccine. I've taken the two, waiting to take the booster jab. It's better to take it than not to take it at all. It helps you a lot if you have something helping to fight, you know, just before you come down with COVID-19. And that's what we can encourage at this point in time, is to encourage you. Let's forget all these theories about trying to reduce Africa's population, trying to reduce black man population is a sign of end times, is a sign of 666 and all of that stuff. Let's play down a lot of those theories and take the vaccine. It's for our own good, really. We've been taking vaccines since we were born, and nothing has happened. In fact, a lot of us are alive today probably because of the vaccines we took while they gave birth to us. So let's encourage more and more reverse people to take the vaccine. If you've taken the two, then make yourself available to take the booster jab, which a lot of people are taking already. I've already lined up myself to take the booster jab, and we can at least continue to encourage people, please take these vaccines.
Andre, very quickly.
Well, vaccination has come to show that indeed there is need to respond to health challenges. But as much as we encourage people to vaccinate, I would also would want to say that there are people who have their rights in this regard. So recognize that there is the anti-vax movement, and then that those who probably have one reservation or the other for certain reasons. The factors are numerous all everywhere in all literature about people who have their rights to also resist vaccination.
All right, so then next up we go to the issue of traditional rulers. Let me also remind government to recognize traditional rulers that they are at all times subject to the authority, directives of the state government, not all their allegiances, culture, or otherwise. Therefore, the consistent absence of some first-class rulers, especially some who are listed, from participating in state functions is unacceptable and will no longer be tolerated. Should they therefore continue to absent themselves from functions, regular meetings, activities, we would no longer no option than to direct their immediate replacement. Envy, very clear your thoughts on that.
Well, I just thought that the traditional institution would have been one that is not just about the government and being probably conferred with some kind of stool or some staff or something. But with what we're seeing in River State, I think the governor knows what exactly he has said. They are under his control, and so it comes up one day if for reasons that they are not attending meetings and he can't, I have not much to say there. But only one thing I'll say is traditional institutions should be respected because they endure more than the political institutions.
Leko?
Yeah, I think it's to look at the laws regarding traditional institutions or so, or they are set up with the government. But if the governor says they've been absent consistently in state functions, he is in a better position to determine how many times they've absented themselves. Do we have situations where some of these monarchs are no longer, you know, alive or something? I know they are processes, especially, let me speak from the Yoruba land angle, that look, in Yoruba land, the king does not die. You only say, look, he's translated unto greater glory. So I do not know whether we have these situations in these communities, but it's within the realm of the traditional institution to be able to control itself, and that's where the chairman of the River State Council of Traditional Rulers should come in. I think it's part of his responsibility to check on these people who have not been attending these meetings and be able to relate with the government of the state.
Yeah, but I'd like to echo Henry's words. Traditional institutions should be and must be respected, and I'll end that on this note. I don't think that the Oba of Lagos, for example, can be removed by a Lagos state governor because he didn't attend state functions, or the Oni of Ife for that matter.
That's why the offices should be insulated, you know, from politics and all of that. Remember what happened in Kano, where Sanusi was deposed. I think we need to, if we can insulate traditional institutions away from government control. Unfortunately, as it is today, only the governor of the state can recognize you as a traditional ruler. Unfortunately, that's what we have at the moment. And he's the one that gives us the stars of office.
There's a difference between the stool and then whether they are recognized. Recognition is not what makes you or that gives you a star. So what if a traditional ruler of a place who comes as a monarch traditionally from the place and government says they will not recognize him? You see, we've actually politicized that institution, particularly in River State. If my king comes from a lineage, for instance, and he's hereditary, and he's the king of the place, for instance, and then a governor comes and says, I don't want to give you a staff. Stay with your staff. You're not the one that will make a king for us. Unless you have the chieftaincy law and expect that our king.
Exactly, the chieftaincy law, exactly.
But you cannot tell me that you are the one that will come and make a king for us and choose who. That's why today, governors influence who is elected a king. You have troubles here and there in all communities and all kingdoms.
We have to wrap this up, gentlemen. We are pressed for time. So the rest of it was just thanking people, and we must be vigilant, our enemies, especially members of the opposition. That is inevitable. That must come in at some point. Did we see any policy? Did we see any direction from besides with all the issues raised? Did we see any particular direction or policy crafting or framework of the River State Government for the year 2022? Very quickly, gentlemen.
Well, difficult really to judge from the speech. Nothing on the economy, nothing on employment, nothing on generally finding policies, programs, and activities to engage the youth of the state. You know, you could say, has that been captured in the budget? But the new year broadcast will have been something of hope, something to that you can trace to the hopes and aspirations of the people. What are you going to do regarding housing? How many houses are you going to provide for Rivers people in terms of employment, in terms of conducive atmosphere to actively engage the youths of the state? Nothing much on economy, nothing much on education, nothing much too in terms of health direction, policy of the state government in these critical areas.
Henry?
Just about what I wanted to say in closing, really. And those are the critical issues of development, as a matter of fact. All the targets and indices, even with the Sustainable Development Goals, are no reference to them at all. And then, of course, there is no really aspiration of the government to the extent that to give hope to the people. I wonder where the hope is. Is it that people aspire to have seamless drive through Abacha Road, so you now will have hope that there won't be traffic there again? That's not the kind of hope we're talking about. So there were actually critical issues that were left out. So to the best of my analysis in closing this, in assessing whether this actually answered most of the aspirations and the expectations of the people, it is really low for a new year speech from the executive of the state to give hope and aspiration to the people.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. We made it. We've come to the end of our analysis of the River State Governor's New Year's Day's address to River's residents. Thank you for listening and being a part of it. Especially thanks to my guest, Henry Kinney, is legal advisor with the Committee for the Defense of Human Rights. Henry, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dayo, for having me.
Ola Lekan is editor with the Independent Monitor. Lekan, always great to have you here.
Thank you, Dayo, and thanks for having me as always.
All right, and hopefully in the coming days we'll be doing an analysis as well of the President's New Year Day's address, also on Hard Facts. Do stay with us, you'll find out when that is going to take off.